everyone, and welcome back to the Committed Creative Podcast. I'm your host, Carmen Allen Pitali. This week I spoke with Sandra Gartner, who is the founder of Essentia Coaching and Consulting. She runs the business with her husband, and together they work with a range of different companies to help with growth, scale, and mindset. Sandra had a whole heap of valuable information to give it to you guys. Everything from talking about how you can recruit people into your team, how you can retain them so they don't leave, and how important mindset is towards growing your business rather than stifling it. So without further ado, let's dive straight in and hear what Sandra has to say. Well, hi, Sandra, and welcome to the Committed Creative Podcast.
Thanks, Carmen. Lovely to be here.
So for those of us in the audience who haven't heard of you before, what is it that you do? Could you just take a moment to explain that? And how do you help your customers?
Yeah, great. So I'm a business leadership coach. So I work with businesses that are often in two areas, one startup phase, or they've been established for a while and they're stuck, they've hit a plateau, they can't sort of bust through. So I work with them to develop their skills as a business leader, and then also work with them on their business to, you know, think about strategies to propel them forward. But I guess the thing that I really work with my clients on is who they need to be, how they need to show up to really make that shift, to make that change. So whether it's a change from being employed into business, or from having a, you know, a small business with just yourself, a solo operator, to having a team, you know, whatever it is, it's all a transition, and I'm here to sort of guide people along and support them to understand that process and how to make that leap.
And how did you get into that work? Because I know that you have grown your own successful business and sold it on. And is that kind of what motivated you to start helping others in this?
Look, I think the way I look at my life is that I've had sort of two phases. One was I was born into a small business family. So I grew up with that in my, you know, environment. We talked about it all the time. I think the moment I could speak or even count, I was working, you know, behind taking the money. So, you know, I had that in my blood, I guess. And then I've also had a fascination with human potential and how to grow to be the best that we can be. And that took me down a pathway after school into, I basically studied occupational therapy and worked in that field in mental health primarily for some time, in fact, in Perth. So there you go. I worked in Perth in that field for some time. But then, you know, in my mid-late 20s, I sort of had that real itch about getting back into business and did my sort of first leap into a business, which failed miserably, mind you, but it was a good experience. And it didn't fail because the business was flawed. It failed because the partnership failed. And it made me realise how important those relationships are and how you need to manage them. And at the time, we were just too young to know how to deal with that. So fast forward probably 30 years, I've had three businesses. Significant businesses in that time, and the last one was the biggest one that I had for 14 years. And I, in fact, went into it because I wanted to start a family, and I didn't want to have the 9-to-5 job. So, of course, that calling back into the flexibility of having a business was there. So I took the leap and started my business from home. And as my son grew, so did my business grow. And at the 14-year mark, I sold it. Went overseas for a couple of years with my husband and my son, and then came back. And I just happened to land in this role supporting startup businesses. It was a government-funded program, and they were looking for business coaches to support startups in that first 12 months. And that sort of got me going. And I just thought, I just found my absolute passion, because I've got business and I've got human potential coming together in this thing called coaching. So, you know, I kept learning and developing and doing courses and getting qualifications, all the things you do just to get better at what you love. And I've been here ever since. So 14 years later, I'm still doing it.
What a brilliant story. What a great journey. So what was the final business that you sold? What were you doing?
Yeah. So it was the one I started from home was a wholesale distribution company. I started in 1994, and it was the start of the wave of basically natural therapies becoming more mainstream. So I was representing a brand that was just starting off that actually grew to be a really very big brand. It was my very first brand. It was an aromatherapy brand called Innessence Aromatherapy, and I still am very one of my strong values is health and well-being, so this was a perfect fit for me, and it was a lot of education around it. So I was out there sort of training people about what this thing was, and then it just sort of took off, got a life of its own over a couple of years. Didn't happen overnight. And then I just brought in more brands that were around the health and wellness space, or natural skincare, health and wellness, and ended up having, I think, 600 or so retail outlets. And was importing stock from overseas or brands from overseas, and just going down the manufacturing pathway. I'd formed a partnership towards the end of that time with the view of going into manufacturing, so our own brand, which is sort of the natural progression. And at the sort of 11th hour, when we were ready to, you know, really, you know, go forward, I just thought, I've probably had enough. I think I need to have a change. So I sold my shares to the partners, and it was a perfect exit for me. And that's going strong, going well, and I'm very happy for them, but I'm happier for me that I made that call at that time and doing what I love.
How did you know it was the time to sell? That's such a big question, but I think that's often, you know, it's your baby and you've grown the baby.
I know that's a good analogy, right? This baby was our teenager. He was, you know, he or she was 14, and, you know, getting a bit independent, getting a bit feisty, you know, getting a bit of a will of its own, you know, had sort of things going on all over the place. And I just felt, do I really want to? I think the thing that really was the factor was, do I want to start again with something that's brand new, even though this has got a foundation that's very solid? I know the effort that it takes to get something new off the ground. And I thought, am I ready to go back and have another baby? And the answer was no.
And that probably segues nicely into talking about running a business with a baby, a real baby, like a human baby.
A real baby.
And that juggle, because personally, that's also why I like to work for myself, just the flexibility and the freedom. The ironic thing is that you probably end up working way harder than you would if you worked for somebody else when you run your own business, but it is certainly more rewarding. I mean, when you had your child, obviously that was one of the drivers, the flexibility, but did you feel that, I just did an International Women's Day podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I talked with a lot of women, and they were discussing about how, you know, you take time off to start your business. You're not taking time off. You're putting a lot of hard work into growing something, but sometimes you're not taken as seriously as a man. Did you feel that way when you kind of shifted into building this business?
I don't know that I felt the distinction between men and women. Like, I don't see that. I just think starting a business is hard. You've got to learn so much. It's all new and it's challenging, and things don't go to plan, as things don't in life. And all the best laid plans can go terribly off the rails, particularly when there's a baby, you know. So I think it's about how you flexible you can be, how adaptable you can be, how forgiving you can be for yourself, and how good a learner you can be. So just take the feedback, you know, just try and take the feedback. The other thing I think is very important, of course, is have the support. So when things do go off the rails, you've got support around you to pick you back up and get you back on track, whether it's family, friends, whoever. Because it's pretty hard. You're on your own, particularly with a baby. You know, you've got a lot to juggle, and it can be overwhelming.
It certainly is a lesson in resilience, I think, running your own business. Mm. How can you find that support network? Like, I know a lot of small businesses, they don't necessarily have other friends who are in business themselves. Is there a way that you can connect with like-minded people, or even find a mentor like yourself? Like, is there a good pathway to searching for those people?
Well, I think, again, I'm not sure what's happening in Perth, but there are in Brisbane and everywhere else, of course, there is that networking opportunity. So that's a great way just to connect with other business owners. So just do a Google search wherever you might be in the world or in Perth and just find out what resonates with you and then just check them out because that's in person. The other thing that's very good, if you're looking for a mentor, there is an organisation called She Mentors, and that's an Australian-based, web-based mentoring platform. Again, it just gives you an opportunity to have an hour with someone at no cost other than your fees, your monthly fee, and that's free advice with some really incredible people that are just giving their time to support other women in business. So, you know, I think it's super important. You've got to reach out. You've got to stretch out. And I know some people are very, you know, COVID has sort of been wonderful in some senses to be back home and, you know, all that sort of nesting. But people have forgotten sometimes what it means. You've got to actually build relationships. And the best way to build relationships is to put yourself forward, whether you go to a group or you do something online that you're not necessarily familiar with. You've got to put yourself forward and stretch out further than you would otherwise.
That's so true. And do you find that when you work with businesses, there's a particular pain point that they come to you with? Are there any common themes between the businesses that you work with?
So interesting because I think if I was going to say the thing, there's probably two things that people come to me for. It's either difficult relationships, so something's gone awry with their staff or their team, or that's a problem, so that keeps them awake at night, or there's a cash flow problem, so they're stuck. But they're generally stuck, and that would be the overarching issue. They're just stuck in a place they don't know how to get out of. So I work with them to give them some foundations to start to get some awareness about their own piece of that, what their contribution is to that scenario, so that they can learn new ways of responding to those stresses, because business is a wonderful vehicle for your own personal development, your own professional growth and personal growth. And there's lots of stresses coming at you, you know, all the time. So it's how you respond to those stresses. And if you just respond in a very habitual way, which we've learned through the, you know, many years, and they helped us in the beginning when we were young. We learned certain ways of behaving because that helped us stay connected in the family or our survival. There's lots of reasons why we chose habitual ways of responding. But as we get older, they're very limiting. So we've got to be aware that that's what's keeping us stuck, that tendency to go down the same pathway, the same, you know, route, and not notice there's other ways to respond. So it is that they hit a plateau, they've got some stresses they don't know how to deal with, and it's often around people and relationships or cash flow.
And how often do you think these problems that they're up against and facing comes down to their mindset and the way they're perceiving problems? And like, I know that you work a lot around changing beliefs. Could you talk more about that and how that works to improving your business when you have a better frame of mind of how you approach what's going on?
Mm. So it's sort of fundamental. It's like building a house. You know, you've got to have a strong foundation. Like if you're going to run a marathon, you get physically fit. But if you're going to build a business, you have to have really good mental fitness, I call it. So mental fitness. So have that presence of mind to respond to those stresses in a positive rather than negative way. So, for example, I'm working with a woman at the moment. I've been in business a long time, got a very good reputation, lots of valuable work she's doing, but she's a massive avoider. So she just avoids stuff and without any awareness around it. So we could have a conversation and she sort of gets really sort of clear about the next steps and what she wants to achieve, and you know, it's totally doable within the time frame. And then I'll meet with her, you know, 2 weeks later and it hasn't happened because her tendency is to avoid things that are difficult. Now, if we keep doing that, we're not going to get to where we want to go. And I think about her and how much she's achieved, which is a lot. So she's got some strategies to overcome that, but she's still only at a sort of certain point. And if we can get that habitual way of operating shifted, she's going to get way more productive, better outcomes, more opportunities will show up. And so we're just working on that awareness. Okay, so what's the avoidance happening now? What's that costing you? What do you think that's about? Is there another way that we could perhaps move forward? Let's think about it and maybe step it out a bit more. There's a whole way of thinking about this, but awareness is the first step. And then it's really about putting some breaks between that reactive tendency. So just having a moment to reflect on that, notice it, just a moment, and then consciously choose a more creative response. That's just one simple sort of example, but she's really starting to accelerate her results. She's focusing much more on what's going to give her the best outcomes, and doing it with much less stress, so much more ease and flow. Because the thing about avoiding something, just as an example, is so much energy goes into the avoidance, mental stress. May not be aware of it, but there's a lot of mental stress that goes into avoiding something. And you know it yourself, when you actually do that one thing, man, it's liberating. It feels really like you lighten up a lot because that thing is off your list and you get the feedback or the rewards or whatever happens out of that. So, but she doesn't have that awareness or didn't have that awareness, and now things are starting to move in the right direction with her.
Mm. Do you think it's connected to confidence in a way? Because obviously you can have the awareness but still feel the fear around doing the thing that you know it's difficult, and perhaps that's why you're putting it off. Do you have any tips for becoming more courageous in what you're trying to achieve? And I mean, it's such a tough one, and I know a lot of us avoid things out of fear about what might happen. How can we build the confidence in that space when we want to work on our businesses?
So confidence comes through action. It's doubt plus action. You don't get confidence and then take the action. You've got to take the action with a lot of doubt. So, and then through that, you start to build some confidence that you can do it. So action is very important in building confidence. But the thing about fear, which really is very pervasive, for all of us, that fear response, it's innate in us as a biological, species. We're very tuned into the negative because of survival. So fear is ever present in many ways. But it's really around listening to those, that stuff going on in your head about the frightening thing, like, I don't want to go on a Facebook Live because I don't want to be seen in the world, for example. Well, okay, fine. So, if you're ready to take that step, and it might be too much of a step first up, like maybe we need to do a little smaller step to get you confident to get to that big step. But if you think about it, that fear is stopping you, even taking a small step, the smallest possible step. And it's about saying to yourself, well, what's the judge happening? What's the judgment I'm making about myself? Do I feel like I'll be, ridiculed? Am I going to be ashamed of myself? Am I going to do a bad job? Well, that's just all self-criticism. That's just beating yourself up. I mean, you wouldn't do it to your friend, would you? No, you're just doing it to yourself. So that's like I'm just beating myself up and stopping myself from going forward. So first thing is really a bit of self-compassion. Okay, I'm feeling afraid to do this one thing. Well, okay, I'm going to learn something from doing this. Whatever happens, I'll learn something. And I'm going to survive it, and I'm going to prepare myself. I'm going to take the step anyway. I'm going to have a lot of doubt because that's how you build courage, but I'm going to take that step anyway and take the feedback and be compassionate with myself and know that I did the best I can at that time, and then just learn from it and then maybe take a bigger step the next time and then a bigger step and get the support around you and do the things you want to do to prepare yourself. But don't not take the step because of fear, which is what many, many, all including me, we all do it. Because fear keeps us stuck.
So true. I know that for me personally, I always like to ask myself, what's the worst that could happen? Like even when we went traveling, I was like, what's the worst that could we could like that could happen? Okay, we could run out of money. Well, then we'll just come home and get a job and go back to what we were doing before. It's not really going to change much.
Isn't that great? And another thing I do sometimes is I just really amp it up. I go, what's the worst that could happen? Oh my God, I could lose my business, I could lose my husband, I could, like I really amp it up, like just be crazy, crazy, crazy in the consequence. I think, well, that's really so ridiculous. None of that's gonna happen, right? None of that's gonna happen. So yeah, we've got our own strategies to sort of manage that, but it is about managing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you work in the space of NLP as well. And I know that some of our listeners probably don't know what that is. Would you mind taking some time to explain what it is and how it works?
So NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So there's many layers to it, but it's really about connecting with people, influencing people, using language very powerfully as that tool to connect. The other part of what I really bring into this is ontology. So that's my training in coaching. So ontological coaching, which marries beautifully with NLP, because ontology is all about your way of being. So how you show up to have that connection with the other person, how you can be, you can co-create something between like you and I, how we've created this podcast together. Individually, it would never have happened. It's something new in the world, and that's being created through our connection. But ontology and NLP are ways of, I guess, it's just a way of, viewing the world and your place in it and how you can have a positive influence and a connection with people to move in a certain direction. But ontology is really about reality and how we create reality. And of course, as you know, we're making it up all the time, mostly, and lots of interpretations and assessments which are not necessarily true that we act on. And so languaging is very important to really get clear about what people are, what you're interpreting and what you're assuming before you actually then respond and get into that conversation with them.
Is it a lot about the kind of dialogue we have within our own brains and controlling it in a better way so that we are having a lot more positive self-talk rather than those negative influences?
And that certainly is important, and that sort of leads into the other thing I do, which is positive intelligence coaching, and that's what that is all about. So that this is a wonderful program that retrains the neural pathway. So rather than habitually go down the old track, as we talked about to begin with, we create neural pathways or new ways of behaving, which are gonna counteract what's called those sabotaging thoughts. So that negative self-talk that we have, we want to reprogram ourselves, if you like, to respond more positively and create more flexibility. And it's a wonderful program because it's app-based. So you actually do it through an app on your phone, and it's repetition over 6 weeks to learn new ways to be flexible and manage that negative self-talk.
And is it something that once you learn it, you need to work on it all the time? And is that work easily incorporated into your daily routine? Like,
I think it has to be, because
yeah.
otherwise, we just, like when you read something or you go to a seminar or you go to a webinar and you get some wonderful information and you come home and you're all excited about it and you go for a few days, applying whatever you learnt, and often a week later you've sort of started to slip away and it starts to get forgotten, and 2 weeks later you're just back doing what you're doing. I mean, how often have I opened up a book and thought, oh, that was a great webinar I went to, and I read my notes and I'd totally forgotten what I'd written. So it's about repetition. So to learn new things, we've got to learn new habits, and we've got to do it through repetition. So unless you bring stuff in and remember to do it over and over and over again, you're going to slip back to what's comfortable and familiar. And that's the old patterns. That's the old self-talk. That's the old negative belief system you're running. So we want to groove in more positive self-talk and have more understanding about our choices in those moments so that we can form new habits and hopefully get better results.
Where does this negative self-talk come from in the first place? Is it how we grew up, or is it, our external influences in our everyday life, or does it come from within, or where does it all start? Is it from many places? Like, I know that's such a big question,
I
but
know. I
are
think,
there some ways that you can tell where it begins?
well, I think it's common to all humans because we have an ego, we have consciousness, so we have the ability to, reflect and analyze and interpret. So, of course, we've got conversations in our heads all the time, all the time. And there's so many factors that come into play as to what those conversations might be. So it's not just the family that we grew up in. I mean, that's very important, but it's also the culture we live in. It's the history we've come from, going back generations, what's come through our lineage, that plays a part. We're female, so that's got a whole context around it. There's so much. And if you can imagine, as a species, we're a species that is absolutely codependent or relying on other humans to survive. We can't do it on our own. Right from the very beginning, we can't do it on our own. So we've had to adapt and we've had to work out how we fit in here. So, how do we fit into this family? How do we fit into this school? How do we fit into this culture, this society, this whatever? And so, through that adapting and working it out, because we're so clever, we've got to work out our ways to fit in, and you get the feedback and the rewards or the punishment in that. Society or family or whatever, you'll get the feedback. And from that, we make up our own interpretations. Interpretations live with us. But they're only our interpretations. And it's fascinating when you speak to, maybe two people that, well, for me, I've got a sister, and we speak about our experience growing up in our family. And she talks, I mean, she's a little older than me, but when she talks, I think that's not the family I grew up in. I don't know what family you were in, but that was not my family. It was exactly the same parents.
It's interesting, isn't it? I had a friend recently when we were talking about high school. She's been my friend for decades, and she was just talking so negatively about our school. And I was thinking, really, you had that experience? I really love school, and just we had just polar opposite views on what the school was like. And I was shocked because I thought she loved it too at the time. So, yeah, it is funny how we all perceive things so differently. You talked a little bit about how, we can't do this all on our own and we need to work together as a society, whatever we're doing. And I mean, I really kind of relate to that with business because as you're growing your business, there does come a point where you do need to ask for help and, you might need to employ new people. And that can be super tricky, bringing someone in when you've had complete control and then trying to relinquish some of that control and delegating. And it can be quite scary. Do you have any tips for business owners who are perhaps at that stage and looking to outsource or hire someone for the first time, and what they should look for, and perhaps what processes they should take to getting the right fit?
Look, it's the most wonderful and scary moment in any business. I know for me, when I had my first hire, I was super excited but super nervous as well because of the responsibility. And the responsibility was for me, it was about I've got to make payroll. I've got to make sure this business can support my first staff. But like anything, it's that confidence. I had to take the step. And then, of course, funnily enough, it did support the payroll and things did work out and off I went. And then I got my second hire. So, look, I think you've got to be prepared. Like on a purely practical level, you've got to be well prepared in terms of knowing that your business has got the potential of bringing in revenue to offset the increased cost of that hire. So you want to really have the pipeline filled and that they come in and your profit's going to drop in a minute because you're paying more wages, but you can accelerate and hopefully grow back the capacity of that business, which will push out more profit, and then you're in a better position. You've got to know who to hire. It's about where's your core strength and what can you outsource to someone that maybe you could pay less. My first hire was always a bookkeeper because I didn't want to do the books. What can you outsource at a lower rate? You're worth so much an hour, and you can outsource something that is not your strength at a lower rate that's maybe going to support you to free up your time so you can get out there and generate more income at a higher rate for the business. I think it's really important to have some cash reserves. That'll take a lot of financial pressure off. So you want to have at least, I'd say, 3 months, if not 6 months, of the salary in your bank account. I mean, I know people are outsourcing, of course, and that's a lot less stressful as long as it's legitimate. You know, there's a lot of regulations in Australia about hiring subcontractors, so you'll be pretty across that. But if you can subcontract, legitimately, then that takes a lot of pressure out of feeling like you've got to make payroll and they just work when you've got the work. The downside of that, of course, is you can get a lot of churn. You know, you get people that you love to work with, do a great job, you spend time getting them up to speed in what you're wanting them to do, and then, of course, they move on. So that commitment isn't there. So that's the downside of that. So there's a lot of practical elements to think about hiring. And there's a lot of legislation around it too. So you've got to have a lot of things in place around what you're paying them and position descriptions and contract, et cetera, of employment. So that's important. But the other thing is, I think you said it right up front, is the control. So sometimes people don't want to let go of control, and that's another sabotaging belief, because that will keep you stuck. If you think, I can't let go and delegate because they won't do as good a job as me, well, you're going to stay stuck. You're going to stay doing all the jobs, all the roles, all the things, and keep yourself at a certain level. Mm-hmm. So you have to manage that sense of, I need to control everything, because as much as we think we can control, we can't. Mm-hmm. And you've got to get comfortable with that and do what you can, of course, to have the right things in place and et cetera. But you ultimately have to trust that letting go of some control and delegating and breathing while you're doing it is going to support you to get to where you want to go, and not let that little niggling thing in your head keep you from taking that step.
So true. And what about retention? Like, once you have a great staff member on board, how can you try to ensure that they stick with you for the long haul? And especially in this day and age where so much of us work from home, sometimes it can be difficult to develop a company culture when everyone's sitting in front of their computer screen in their own space away from an office. Do you have any tips around sort of staff retention at all?
That's a really interesting question, because we've been forced into this situation through COVID now that people are working remotely or hybrid. And so, of course, how do you keep building that company culture or that business culture where people feel connected? So I think it's an evolution, and probably we're going to learn a lot about this over the coming years, because what's happening at the moment, as you probably heard and know, is that, the great resignation. People aren't going to put up with, the 9-to-5 or working for the lousy boss any longer. So people are moving jobs, and we're in a low unemployment era right now. So there's certainly, in some areas, there's plenty of jobs to move to. So how do you keep staff that you really value? It's always about having that relationship first. People tend to leave bad bosses before they leave bad companies. So you've got to have trust. You've got to be able to believe that they can try things and fail and be okay with that. That's the foundations of innovation. So we want people to try. We want to coach them. So it's that whole thing about manager as coach, not manager as autocratic, bully. We're moving away from that model. We want to manage to coach, and to coach means to develop the person, the whole person. And it's not just about the business deliverables for that person, but it is the whole person. So I think if you come from that place as a business owner, that you really deeply care about that person's development, and you recognise them, reward them and support them, you're a long way down the track, because many people aren't doing that. It's that micromanaging, controlling, fear-based way of operating, as opposed to more open, expressive, conscious way of operating.
I'm a big believer that people should be evaluated on their output rather than the hours that they're sitting in front of the computer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's right. That's exactly right. That's so old thinking, isn't it? Work 8 hours a day, and I could work 8 hours a day and out, do 3 units of output, or I could do 30 minutes a day and do five, but what would you prefer?
Exactly. It's so true. Yeah. I mean, COVID has been negative in so many ways, but also positive in some ways. When we first started our business, we were always working remotely from the outset, I should say. And, some people would learn that we couldn't meet them face to face and they wouldn't want to work with us anymore. And COVID has certainly changed that now, where a lot more people are open to having a Zoom and having a
Yeah.
chat on Zoom rather than meeting face to face.
Yeah.
Although I must admit, going back to what you were first saying about face-to-face connection, that's super important too.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of our time now. It's been so insightful, and thank you so much, Sandra. My final question is, if someone is perhaps in a corporate 9-to-5 and they're not too happy, maybe they have a micromanager boss that you mentioned, or they don't have the flexibility to work from home and they really need a change of lifestyle, where would you say they start? Do they need a great business idea and make the break, or can they, adapt on the skills they've already got? Like, it's a very broad question, but does it all come down to mindset, to making those first few small steps, and how can they go about making that breakaway?
That's a great question because I think there is that mindset element, but there's also preparation. We want to prepare ourselves, and I think the first step with anyone that wants to go into business, yes, think about their experience, what they love to do, who their market may be if they've got an idea, and is there a need for what they're offering. And most importantly, will that market pay for it? So if I can get a yes in those three, in those boxes, they're prepared to pay. I know who my market is, and I love what I'm doing, and I've got my experience behind me. That's a good place to start. That's the formation of an idea that might have some legs in the market. And then you really want to do a bit of research, put a bit of thinking into it. Look, I am a planner. I do believe in writing a plan, and there's some pretty simple business plans you can get online and just jog your thinking around the elements of starting a business, because it isn't for the faint-hearted. It's if you've been an employee and you're going to transition to a business owner, it does not happen overnight. You've got to transition from that employee mindset thinking to a business owner, and it's quite a journey. So just to start thinking about it, to start with getting some things on paper, doing a bit of a test run, maybe do something on the side, keep your job, but test it out, try a few things, whatever it is. Pitch yourself to somebody. If it's a product, see if someone will buy it. If it's a service, see if someone will buy it. Just get some feedback. And then work out how can you move out of that job in a way that will support you. Because the other thing about business is it costs money. It doesn't matter how clever you are with low cost marketing, it will still cost you money, and you've got to survive in that early phase. And the early phase can be 1 year, maybe 2 years before you start to really draw a decent income. It depends. It can happen earlier. But you've got to prepare for that at least 12 months before you might be able to replace your income, maybe longer. So you want to prepare for that and have some cash behind you. So maybe the first step is trial it while you've got your job. See if you get some interest, get a bit excited about the possibility, get some support, talk about it, get a bit of a plan together. And then if you can work part-time, how brilliant, because you've got part-time income to support a launch of a lean business. So you just want to do it in the leanest possible way, because that's how you test the market. That's how you test if it's viable. And then if it looks like, wow, this is going to work, then you quit.
But you've managed to build your confidence bit by bit, and by the time you're quitting, you're actually feeling like you're
That's it.
confident that it's going to work out.
And you've also transitioned much more into that I'm a business owner mindset than I'm an employee, because as an employee, we're used to doing our job and doing it well, and the work sort of depending on the job, of course, but there's only so much you're responsible for in a business, particularly if you're starting it up yourself. As you're responsible for a lot of areas that you've got no experience in. So, there's a lot to learn. So we've got to transition and learn as we go. But the better you can plan it out, I think, the better you're going to be in terms of launching and being successful with some stability around you with finances.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sandra. That was great. And where can people find you if they want to look you up on your website or on socials?
Yep. So best way would be website. So essentiacoaching.com. So essentiacoaching.com.au or my LinkedIn profile, Sandra Gartner. That you'll find me there and love to chat, love to connect.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Thank you for listening to the Committed Creative Podcast. I would be ever so appreciative if you could head on over and subscribe to the pod or leave me a review. Or if you're so inclined, head on over to my website, redplatypuscreative.com, and send me an email with some feedback. I'm all ears. Until next time, here's to going all in on your creative pursuits.